Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latos. Coming up, the European Union slams sanctions on top South Sudanese military leaders.
Our impression is that neither side, government nor the rebels, is seriously engaging with the issues. It was therefore time to send a strong signal.
Ghana rejects La Liga's conflict claims by Ghanaian football fans turned asylum seekers in Brazil.
The claims that we are hearing as the grounds on which they are applying for asylum in Brazil are totally untrue. There is no place here in this country where there is religious conflict based on which any group of people are being persecuted.
Those stories and more coming up in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
After months of conflict in South Sudan, the European Union has now decided to impose sanctions on two military leaders. Peter Gadet, a rebel militia chief, and government commander Santino Deng have been hit by a travel ban and assets freeze for hampering their country's peace process. The current conflict started after President Salva Kiir sacked his vice president Riek Machar. Why is it only now that the EU is acting by imposing sanctions on military leaders? A question for DW's Ben Triggett in Brussels.
But as always, the European Union needs some time to get an unified opinion on what to do in South Sudan, and the Council of the Union deliberated a lot and has now decided to target at least two of the military leaders in this civil war. First, as you mentioned, it is Santino Deng, the commander of the 3rd Infantry Division of the Sudan's People's Liberation Army. That is, of course, the government's army, and Mr. Deng had a leading role in the recapture of the city of Bentiu in May. And the second person is Peter Gadet. He's allegedly the leader of the new militia, that's a tribal militia fighting the South Sudan government. Gadet launched an attack on the city of Bentiu in April, which killed more than 200 civilians, and the EU says now Mr. Gadet is to be held responsible for fueling the cycle of violence and serious human rights violations.
Why are they imposing those sanctions only on two people and not top leaders or more than two?
The European Union is always cautious not to fuel the conflict. They want to see what happens, and they want to keep their powder dry, so to say, to have the next available steps at hand if these sanctions do not work. And as it seems, they won't work because Mr. Machar already said he's not worried about these sanctions because the rebel leaders don't have any assets that can be frozen in the European Union. And a travel ban for the military leaders is also not a very big threat because they don't intend to travel to the European Union. So the sanctions are not a very sharp sword, so to say.
That was actually my next question. Does it make any sense to impose a travel ban on a military leader who is not intending to travel to Brussels or anywhere else? But anyway, what does the EU expect to achieve by imposing these sanctions on these military leaders?
It is more a political symbol to tell the war factions in South Sudan, we are watching you. At some point, people may be held responsible for atrocities in the civil war. They might be brought to justice before, for example, the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague and the Netherlands. Broader economic sanctions would have a higher impact, but the EU diplomats said in Brussels the war-torn country is already at the brink of a famine with poor healthcare and water supplies for the people. Sanctions might, in this situation, be devastating, although rebel leader Riek Machar suggested in an interview that Sudan should shut down oil exports to South Sudan and Kenya should close the ports for trade with South Sudan. That, of course, have a broader effect than the EU, the needle pins, so to say.
Ben Triggett speaking from Brussels. Dwelling on this topic, I have also been talking to Nick Westcott. He is the Managing Director for Africa of the European External Action Service. He told me more about how the EU has been monitoring developments in South Sudan.
This week sees the third anniversary of South Sudan, and I was actually at the independence celebrations on the 9th of July 2011. And we did not expect in 3 years' time that we would be where we are now. We have followed the events since the breakdown in December last year, the split in the government and the beginning of effectively a civil war. And we, the European Union, have given our full support to the efforts of the regional organization, IGAD, and the African Union to try to resolve the conflict peacefully. And we wanted to give those efforts the maximum amount of time as well as the maximum amount of support. But it has now reached the stage where there has been a ceasefire since January, which was broken, and then it was reaffirmed in May, and it has been broken again. And there has been a process of talks underway in Addis which have stalled, and our impression is that neither side, government nor the rebels involved in those talks, is seriously engaging with the issues. It was therefore time to send a strong signal.
Some people think that sanctions on top leaders would have more impact than on military leaders. What is your take on this?
Yes, I'm sure they would. And that is where we are heading, unless there's some serious progress to be made.
The two are said to have committed human rights abuses and violated the cessation of hostilities agreement, respectively. Why giving them just symbolic sanctions and not really strong sanctions?
We don't want to take unnecessary action. We wish to encourage a peace process that will relieve the suffering of the people of South Sudan. So we are beginning step by step. Ultimately, if there is no response from anybody, then I suspect not only the European Union, but also the countries of the region will impose sanctions, which would have much more immediate impact on the leaders. Both IGAD and the African Union have suggested that their patience too is running out. There is already an investigation going on, committee of inquiry set up by the African Union into the atrocities and human rights abuses that have accompanied this civil war. And they will report back in September. If there is evidence that atrocities have taken place, those responsible must be brought to justice. So sanctions are only the first step.
Nick Westcott, the EEAS Africa Managing Director. You're listening to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link, broadcasting from Bonn.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
Authorities and Muslim clerics in Ghana have dismissed claims by football fans turned asylum seekers in Brazil that Ghana isn't safe for Muslims to leave. This came after reports said hundreds of Ghanaian Muslim football fans who entered Brazil as tourists for the FIFA World Cup had asked for asylum, stating that they were fleeing interreligious conflict in their country. Our correspondent in Accra, Isaac Kaleji, has been following the story, and here is his report.
Ghana's newly appointed Minister for Youth and Sports, Mahama Ayariga, told me that the government has launched an investigation into the reports that some 200 citizens were seeking asylum in Brazil. They were among the 500 or so supporters of the national soccer team, the Black Stars, who were flown by the government to the 2014 FIFA World Cup.
I have written to our Minister for Foreign Affairs and Regional Integration to use the facilities at our embassy in Brazil to ascertain the veracity of the reports that we are receiving. If they turn out to be true, we have directed that they should establish the identity of all the individuals who have applied for asylum in Brazil.
The supporters apparently told the Brazilian authorities that their reason for seeking asylum there was because of religious conflicts, especially targeting Muslims. The minister said this was outrageous.
The claims that we are hearing as the grounds on which they are applying for asylum in Brazil are totally untrue. There is no place here in this country where there is religious conflict based on which any group of people are being persecuted, for which reason they may seek asylum outside the territories of Ghana.
A Muslim cleric who is also a chief in the Gonja district of Ghana, Alhaji Jawula, says he's worried about the negative portrayal of Ghana's Muslim community, who make up about 17% of the population. He believes the asylum bid has nothing to do with religious discrimination.
We have absolutely no Islamic problem in this country. We have no religious problem, whether between Muslims or Christians, within Christians or within Muslims. So this is a farce. I believe these are economic migrants, and they're just looking for an excuse to get out of the country. Ghana is a very peaceful country.
Many people I spoke to in Accra are also angry and feel their nation is being humiliated by the actions of their country folks in Brazil. Some say they should be brought back home and punished.
I mean, you have to be ashamed of some of all these things, because even the reasons they are dependent on to seek asylum is wrong. I mean, there's no religious, fighting. If you're a Ghanaian, you live in Ghana, you must be ashamed of some of these things, because we live better.
I don't think it's a good thing. Back home here, there's nothing like religious violence going on here. It's a disgrace to our country. They should look for those guys doing that, and then some punishment should be meted out to them.
While the investigation is underway, there have been calls to the government to stop airlifting football supporters to foreign countries to support their teams. Lawmaker Samuel Kujetua Blackwa vented his anger on national television.
It appears to me that right from day one, they really gave this country a bad image, bad press. There was no appreciation. And that's why I'm beginning to agree with those who have said that, look, these supporters we have been sending, since we started qualifying for the World Cup in 2006, let's stop it.
Soccer fans and analysts consider the current development to be a further blow on football in Ghana following the Black Stars' early departure from the World Cup. The hope for better years ahead for the nation to redeem its image.
Isaac Kaleji reporting there. Still to come, a photo exhibition shows football is a universal language.
Human rights.
A tough immigration law in South Africa has sparked confusion and fear among thousands of Zimbabweans living there. It forces them either to go home voluntarily and reapply for a permit to live and work in South Africa under new conditions, or face deportation. The people affected are those who went to South Africa under a special amnesty permit in 2010. Tuzo Kumalo with more details.
Some estimates say there are more than 2 million Zimbabweans living in South Africa, driven out by political and economic turmoil in their homeland. In 2010, over 250,000 Zimbabweans who were living in the country illegally were given 4-year work, study and business permits under a special amnesty. The majority of these permits are set to expire at the end of this year, and the permit holders were looking forward to a smooth sailing process for their extension. However, South Africa's new immigration laws have sent shockwaves through the Zimbabwean immigrant community. An announcement made by the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs, Fatima Kohan, in March this year, signaled the end of the road for those Zimbabweans who got their permits under the Zimbabweans Documentation Program, DZP.
The cabinet meeting of the 19th of March approved the approach on the expiry of permits under the special DZP project. In this regard, cabinet has agreed that permit holders will be expected to reapply for their permits in their country of origin.
This means the Zimbabweans will be treated as first-time applicants who, according to the new law, can only apply for work visas while in their country of origin, not in South Africa. The new law further states that only those foreigners in possession of certain skills like engineering, urban planning, external auditors and many others will be granted work visas. The regulations also require local companies to justify why they've given a job to a foreign national and not to a South African. This is a blow to those Zimbabweans who earn their money from manual jobs, which could just as well be done by South Africans. Nomalanga Dlamini is a mother of three who arrived in South Africa 10 years ago. She is afraid of what the future will hold when her permit expires in December.
We are in the middle of nowhere. We don't know what we are supposed to do. We don't know what's going to happen to us. We do not know what will happen to our jobs, and we cannot go to Zimbabwe yet. Because what are we going to do? It's so frustrating.
Dorcas Mero, who is now bedridden after an almost fatal accident, is in a worse predicament. Her passport expired before she received the special amnesty permit. Under the new law, if she travels out of the country without a valid visa, she risks being banned from entering South Africa for up to 5 years.
I don't know what to do. Really, I don't know what to do. I'm worried. And I'm afraid as well. If they deport me in this situation, I'm afraid.
Paul Verin is a Methodist church bishop and well-known activist for the rights of foreigners. He is furious about South Africa's new immigration laws and likens them to those of the apartheid era.
And I'm sorry to make this comparison, but it feels as if we're dealing with the same kind of complications as we dealt with the past laws in the old apartheid era.
The Minister of Home Affairs has asked Zimbabweans to be patient while his department decides their fate, but they see only a dark, uncertain future.
That was our correspondent in Johannesburg, Tuzo Kumalo.
What's new? What's interesting? What matters? Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
As the FIFA World Cup 2014 comes to an end, and with Germany in the final, just about everyone here has football on their minds. Klaus Vollmann, a photographer by profession, has been traveling on a motorbike around Gabon, the Republic of Congo, and Cameroon with his project Ballwechsel, which roughly translated means ball swap. He has been trying to find a link between German and African football fans. While there, he snapped some photos which are going to go on show at the Olympics and Sport Museum in the city of Cologne. Loveday Wright caught up with him, and here is her report.
During his travels, Klaus Vollmann noticed how popular German football is in Africa. He was inspired to turn his motorbike trip into a photo exchange project. Germans living in Cologne took photos of themselves with their footballs. Vollmann delivered these photos to Africa along with the balls and brought back a photo of each football with its new owner.
The main project of this journey was football. And so, in my opinion, football is international. And because football is international, because everybody knows the football players like Schweinsteiger and all these things, and why. So we also know Eto'o, for example. And so it's an international thing, and there's no border in this case. In my opinion, it's really international communication.
Vollmann's photos show how 90 footballs from Cologne made their way to small villages in Gabon, the Republic of the Congo, and Cameroon on the back of a motorbike. By recording each ball's journey, Vollmann wanted to create a link between German and African individuals. Gudrun Schmitz is one of the Germans who took part in the project. She wanted to send the footballs with a taste of home.
I wanted to personalize the balls, so I decorated them with a greeting from Cologne and a little sketch of our famous cathedral.
Vollmann's photos capture that moment of excitement when children get to try out their new balls for the first time. For Carolyn Linnenberg back in Cologne, the photo exchange project was a way to feel that she was connecting with Africans on a level playing field.
It would have been easy for a European to go to Africa with a suitcase full of balls and distribute them. But because of the photos he took and the photos he brought back, he made it clear, I'm not Father Christmas. I want something in exchange, the photos, and you are all part of a project.
Communication, not charity, was Vollmann's aim. He believes the project's success in forging a connection between Germans and Africans was down to the international appeal of the beautiful game.
I think it's complicated, really, to get a connection between Germany and Africa. One time I met one person where we got in a conversation, and he told me, you have to accept each other, and that's the most important point. And so, really, there are two different cultures. But in my opinion, because of football, you can break these problems.
Kai Hilger, the curator of the exhibition, agrees.
Football is a world on its own. It's a language which works just as well in Cologne as it does in African countries.
That report was by Loveday Wright.
USA.
It's Friday, and it's time now to give you the microphone. And let's hear now what you have to say about the stories we have been covering on this program. Abubakar Jallo joined me in the studio shortly before we went on air.
Hi, Asunta.
As I am sure you know, economies in Africa have been projecting sharply in the past few years. Although the continent is still riddled by conflicts and natural disasters, that hasn't prevented it from keeping up with global economic growth. In this connection, this week's Africa on the Move report sparked an interesting response.
That must be the report about Oronko cement factory in Namibia that is turning blackthorn plants into wood chips, which then serves as biofuel, enabling the factory to meet 30% of its energy needs.
That's the one. Tahoji Boka from Maiduguri in Nigeria, right? Experts say investors should focus more on the continent as it offers higher returns on their investment. African consumers spend over $600 billion annually. The continent economy grows by 5% each year. The middle class is expanding rapidly with a growing appetite for high and luxury goods. Africa is in the ascendant. Development in Africa has so far been limited, but the continent now finds itself on the fast track.
Thank you for that response, Tahoji. Africa on the Move will be back next week with more positive stories. What else have you got, Abu?
Eddie Muchals Benzin from Soroti in Uganda sent a series of letters dating back to October 2013.
Wow, that's 9 months ago since Edimu sent us those letters. It's really slow way of sending.
Unbelievable, eh? But happily, all 5 letters made it through the long journey from Soroti to us right here in Bonn, Germany.
And what messages do these letters contain?
Mostly requests for little gifts, including magazines and our newsletter. But one of the letters did contain something specific.
I'm getting a little bit curious. What is it? Let's hear then.
Okay, Edimu writes, I am one of your regular listeners. I am 59 years old, but I always tune into Deutsche Welle regularly because the radio station broadcasts the truth.
Wow, glad to hear that. And thank you, Edimu. We will look into your requests and reply to them.
And now a reminder about our quiz competition. We will be issuing 3 prizes to 3 separate winners, 1 tablet and 2 smartphones. We will air a report in the segment Africa on the Move on our Africa Link radio show and also post an article on our webpage dw.de/Africa. You have 1 week to send us the right answer. To qualify for the draw, you must meet the following requirements. Your response must include full name, age, city and country you're writing from, and contact details, including email and mobile phone contact. We will not consider any entry without that information. That's all from me. If it's Friday, it's your saying. Over to you, Asumta.
Thank you very much, Abu Bakali. You can respond to topics covered on Africa Link or on our website by sending us a text message on +491609575910. An email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. Jose will be back at the same time next week.
Listen to Africa Link where and when you want. Subscribe to our podcast and you will get the latest edition sent to you. Log on to mediacenter.dw.de/English/podcasts and look out for the Africa Link podcast. Africa Link, bringing you the story where and when you want it.
And now a quick look at our main headlines. 2 top South Sudanese military leaders have been hit by an EU travel ban and assets freeze for allegedly committing atrocities and hampering the peace process in their country. Ghana has rejected claims from nearly 200 of its fans at the World Cup who have requested asylum in Brazil that there is any religious conflict in their country. And a tough immigration law in South Africa has sparked confusion and fear among thousands of Zimbabweans. And that's all for this week. Remember to watch the German boys who will be taking on Argentina on Sunday. Mark Caldwell will be in the studio on Monday. Till next time, on behalf of the whole team here at Africa Link, it's me, Asumta Latus. Auf Wiedersehen.